Today on the Music City Audible, we're checking in on the position battles on this team ahead of tomorrow's preseason opener against the San Francisco 49ers, plus a little bit more on yesterday's joint practice. Let's get to it! Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and I'm expecting this to be my last solo graveyard shift pod until Justin Mello returns. Going to have some guests on tomorrow to preview the preseason game more in depth, what to watch for in that game, and then Friday, another guest on live at 10:30 a.m. Central right here on the typical MCA Friday live stream to recap tomorrow night's preseason game. But today, I want to talk about some roster battles. What's going on at right guard with Fernando Carmona really getting into the mix? Some other battles to watch on the roster. The Titans released their first unofficial depth chart, so we're going to take a look at that, acknowledging that you got to take this with a grain of salt. Probably wasn't put together by the coaching staff. I doubt Robert Saleh or Mike Borgonzi had much involvement in this other than maybe signing off on it and saying, yes, this depth chart is good to publish to the public. So we'll take a look at that. But before we get into all that, I would like to touch on a few things from yesterday's joint practice, get into them a little bit more depth now that it's been about 24 hours since that happened. And especially the idea that this was some sort of reality check for the Titans going up against a good 49ers team. At least they were good last year despite a bunch of injuries, expected to be pretty good this year in a very tough and crowded division. But the idea that, like, well, the Titans thought that they were doing well and were ahead of schedule, and then they go practice against a real good team and you find out that, oh, maybe they're further away than we thought. I think there is some truth to pull out of that. But I also kind of want to reset the idea with some context here as we talk about what actually happened at practice. First of all, I didn't really see this reported very many places, but Nick Wagner, who covers the 49ers for ESPN, put out a really long tweet, very detailed notes on yesterday's practice. It was mainly from a 49ers perspective, but it sounds like Wagner and Teron Davenport worked together to cover this practice as the ESPN reporters on site, with TD watching the Titans offense against the Niners defense and Wagner watching the Niners offense against the Titans defense. So he put out some notes for Titans fans too, because he knows that he's kind of covering the Titans defense for Teron while Teron covers the Niners defense for him. So here's what he said that wasn't very widely reported yesterday that I didn't see before yesterday's live stream, or else I definitely would have mentioned it, but just going to read this bullet point from his, again, very long and detailed tweet. Some other Titans defensive notables. After an early completion from QB Mac Jones to wide receiver Malik Turner, Titans cornerback Micah Robinson forced and recovered a fumble, which fired up the Tennessee side. Linebacker Cody Barton had a PBU on a throw from Purdy for wide receiver DeJon Stribling. Simmons got to Purdy for a pressure or would-be sack on a couple of occasions. Defensive end Jermaine Johnson forced a Purdy throwaway. Linebacker Anthony Hill nearly intercepted a pass from Jones for wide receiver Jordan Watkins. Defensive backs Mario Goodrich and Nazee Johnson came up with interceptions against Curtis Rourke and Jones, respectively. So the DBs there, I mean, Jim Wyatt did have the DBs note in his 10 observations from yesterday's practice. He also talked about Cody Barton playing well in yesterday's practice, but Jim was also kind of focused on the Titans offense. Oh, that's the thing about this practice, is that they were happening on, you know, two fields at the same time. Offense versus defense, Niners offense versus Titans defense, Titans offense versus Niners defense. So it's hard for the beat writers out there to keep track of everything that's happening on both sides. Jim's article was nice and informative on his 10 observations, but even he was mostly watching the Titans offense and then spinning his head around to the defense when he could. So he had some notes on Cody Barton. He had these two interceptions by the back end defensive backs that, you know, Mike Borgonzi just signed recently and added to this roster. Nice to see them out there making plays against backup quarterbacks. But the notable things for me here are, first of all, Micah Robinson forcing and recovering a fumble. He's not the first player to do that on the Titans defense in training camp. James Williams had a play earlier last week, I think, where he punched a ball out and was the guy who also scooped it up. So Micah Robinson continuing to make plays despite the pressure on the back end of the roster, you know, that he might be feeling from the newly signed defensive backs and the churn that's happening at that position on the depth chart. Micah Robinson holding his own, I think, as the pretty clear cornerback five before we get to a drop off and the new guys that were just signed after him. Cody Barton, making some plays. That's good. We like to see that, but he's not the only one. Anthony Hill Jr. also out there nearly intercepting a pass. He had interceptions last week, so nice to see him continuing to stack days. And then Jeffrey Simmons continuing to be unblockable, pressure or would-be sack on a couple of occasions, and Jermaine Johnson getting in on the action too, pressuring the quarterback. So it wasn't all bad. And apparently the final score from the practice, if you can, you know, count a final score or whatever, the way that they were tracking things, was 25-21 49ers, with the Titans failing to complete a Hail Mary in the final seconds after they got a drive with 50 seconds left in the practice. So 25-21 doesn't sound like domination by the 49ers, even if they did win the practice. And here's the thing I really wanted to talk about. I actually re-listened to Robert Saleh's press conference last night, because the first time I watched it was right after practice. I was trying to get ready for my live show. And also, I don't know if you guys tried to watch this live, but the audio was incredibly terrible. It was so off. They must have had the mic routing back into the speaker somehow, because I know it wasn't a recording live issue, because when they posted the press conference, the audio's fine. But the live version of it had this crazy echo. It was totally nuts. But so I rewatched it yesterday with less distractions around, and this Robert Saleh quote really stood out to me. He's talking about how, you know, the 49ers offense sort of had their way-ish with the defense. Obviously, I just read a bunch of notes that suggest that they didn't completely have their way, but they did have a couple periods, the Niners offense, where they were totally clicking and unstoppable, it felt like. Anyway, listen to this Robert Saleh answer about that kind of situation with the defense getting abused, more or less. And then I'll tell you what stood out most to me about this. That, to me, this, what I'm about to tell you, this is the reality check of yesterday's practice. It's not about the Titans are a terrible team. That's the reality check. No, I'll tell you. But listen to Robert Saleh answer this question.
You know, like I said, this offense, you know, Kyle and his staff, they know every single flaw to our every weakness to our scheme. They've been going against it for the last 10 years. So it was really good to get a lot of the route concepts that we need to help teach the principles of our defense. And it'll start making sense to our guys, hopefully, and in terms of how it evolved and how we got to where we are from a teaching standpoint. And so, you know, anytime you get exposed to tape and new systems and new bodies that you're going against, which is why I value these inter-squad joint practices so much. You're going to learn something from it rather than the redundancy of playing against your own team versus the same schemes over and over again. So these days to me are gold if you can handle it the right way. And I think our guys did.
So yes, Kyle Shanahan knows the scheme, whatever. The part that really stands out to me is Saleh saying it was good for us to get route concepts to help teach our scheme so that the guys start to understand it and how it evolves. The reality check to me here is, this is a new system on both sides of the ball. And for us to expect that, oh, because they add John Franklin Myers and Jermaine Johnson and Solomon Thomas and Jordan Elliott, oh, that they're just going to, these guys know the scheme already, so this is going to be a smooth, quick, easy transition. Like, probably not. It could take these guys time, especially in the secondary, which is full of guys who have never played in this system before. Even if Cordell Flott played for Brian Daboll's Giants last year, he didn't play for Robert Saleh's defense. He didn't play in this scheme. Alante Taylor has not played in this scheme. Amani Hooker, Kevin Winston Jr. The only guy in the secondary that's played in this scheme is the safety Tony Adams, who's in more, I would say, kind of a limited role. So the fact that Saleh's using this joint practice and the next two as well to see different types of offensive looks, even if there may be some overlap Shanahan scheme-wise between what he's getting from Kyle Shanahan and what he's getting from the Seahawks next week with their new play caller who spent 8 years, I think, or something like that with Shanahan. So those are kind of similar schemes, but the scheme that Saleh's defenses have had trouble stopping, see the Seahawks 49ers playoff game last year. But my point is that it's a complex secondary scheme to pick up, coverage principles, the rules that they're following, when routes go certain directions, who takes which area of the field. Like, that can take a little bit of time for the secondary to get on the same page. And I had a comment on yesterday's live stream from Daniel Caribbean, I think, who said that the secondary has to gel just like an offensive line has to gel. And that's 100% true. These guys have to be moving in sync, playing as one unit, even if there's four or five or six guys back there, all communicating in coverage and making sure that they're covering the right guy. I actually saw, I think it was, might have been a Calvin Ridley catch. There was a play in the Nissan Stadium scrimmage I saw where one of the cornerbacks is dropping into like, you know, a deep third of the field area to cover. And as Calvin Ridley, I think it was Calvin Ridley, is running into that spot of the field and turning on like a little hook route, like 10 yards downfield, 8 yards downfield. And as the corner's dropping, he's pointing at Ridley and signaling to the linebacker. It's like, hey, this is your zone now. You got to come over and cover this area because I'm dropping. Those kinds of miscommunications and things like that will get better over time, the more reps they get in this system. And yes, the more different offenses that they see. And to emphasize maybe the difficulty that these players might be having picking up Saleh's coverage principles, I want to play what I would call an eyebrow-raising quote from about 8 days ago given by 49ers safety Jair Brown comparing Raheem Morris's scheme that the 49ers are in now this year to other schemes he's played in. Now, he doesn't directly reference Robert Saleh and last year's 49ers defense, but it feels like some shade being thrown Robert Saleh's way, almost the same kind of shade that we've seen Titans players throwing Brian Callahan's way, not directly, but just by referencing how much they prefer what they're doing now to what they were doing maybe the year before or in years past. This is a bit of a long quote. There's a couple questions in here that he answers, but really interesting to me, and I want to talk about what he had to say.
Camp is going great. My favorite camp, honestly, since I've been here. I love this scheme. I love this scheme. I love the teammates I got. I'm comfortable this year for me. And I'm honestly having fun, bro. Having fun. And I can't remember last time I had this much fun.
So some of the other DBs have talked about how Raheem has kind of stripped away some of the, you know, just hard to grasp details, just made it easier to grasp, I suppose. Do you feel the same way, first of all? And if so, can you kind of enlighten us on what that means?
Absolutely. Raheem's dope, bro. Super dope. He wants football players, you know. Previous schemes we've been in haven't wanted that, you know. Raheem wants you to play football. He wants instinctive players. He wants guys who can just, you know, get out there and play ball and read the quarterback. So scheme fits all of us, man. And it's been great to see us transition into this explosive D-back unit.
So the second question that we heard in there was some of the DBs have talked about this scheme and Raheem Morris stripping away some of the complexities. Can you elaborate on that? And he says that Raheem just wants football players. Past schemes we've played in didn't want that. He went on to say that this scheme is a little bit more similar to Steve Wilks' scheme. Now, the 49ers defensive coordinator history, 2023, Steve Wilks. 2024, Nick Sorensen, who was promoted from defensive passing game coordinator and Nick Ull cornerbacks coach. So most likely, I mean, he was the passing game coordinator under Wilks, promoted to defensive coordinator when Wilks left. Sounds like maybe they ran a similar scheme. 2025, here comes Robert Saleh back with the Niners after his previous stint and after the head coaching job with the Jets didn't work out. And then this year now, Raheem Morris. So he's either talking about Sorensen or Saleh or both when he says past schemes didn't want that. Because again, later in this presser, he compared Raheem Morris's scheme and said it was similar to what Wilks asked of them. This doesn't jive with anything we've heard this offseason from Robert Saleh, Gus Bradley, or any of the defensive coaches who have all talked about how they want their players to, they want to keep the scheme like less complex, more on the simple side, so that the players can understand it and play fast. And play fast and violent, obviously, is the mantra of the team right now. So how can they be wanting them to play fast and violent while installing a scheme that has all these complexities that, you know, Jair Brown said, this scheme just wants football players. The past scheme didn't want that. I don't know what that exactly means about Robert Saleh. Like, we can look at Robert Saleh's history of coordinating defenses, and they've always been very good, if not absolutely elite. Specifically, when he was with the Jets, they were elite for 3 years in a row. But I have talked about this before. The Jets' first year under Saleh, they were the worst defense in the NFL. 32nd in yards allowed, points allowed. They were by far the worst defense in the league. Is that about not having the right players to fit the scheme, the John Franklin Myers, Jermaine Johnsons, those kind of guys that Saleh has brought in to hopefully try to accelerate past that learning curve? Or is it about the secondary having trouble understanding the rules of the defense and picking it up and playing fast in those rules? So that's my big question here, is how long is it going to take for the secondary to really start to gel and understand what they need to do? The more joint practices that they get and preseason game reps that they get, I think the quicker that acclimation process is going to be. But I really hope somebody on the Titans beat asks Robert Saleh or Gus Bradley or some of the defensive backs about this Jair Brown quote and what he means by that and what their reaction or response to that quote would be. I've put a bug in the ear of some Titans beat people. So hopefully that question gets asked here soon so we get an answer. But anyway, all that to say, the reality check to me after yesterday's joint practice is that the Titans are still a rebuilding team, learning a brand new scheme on both sides of the ball, installing a brand new culture, new coaches, new players. It's going to take a little bit more time. They're not going to go out in their first practice against an opponent since they played the Jaguars in week 18 in January and just suddenly be an elite team. Like, it's going to take more time than that. By midseason, will they have picked up the defense? You hope that that is the case, but it might not be till November, December that we really start seeing this defense take a step and be a shutdown unit when they're not, you know, if and when they're not getting constant pressure on the quarterback. Like, constant pressure on the quarterback can erase a lot of things, but you're still going to need the secondary to play as one unit. And it's understandable that they are not doing that right off the bat, right? You know, they just finished the install phase of training camp. So it's understandable where they're at now. But it is a little bit of a reality check. I don't think that we have to take this to mean the Titans are only going to win four games or whatever. They're going to be a bad team again, but we can understand where the team is at in the install phase and picking up the defense. All right, got to take my first break now. When we come back, we're going to dive into the position battles that we're going to be watching closely in preseason week one. Be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha steaks, because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak, because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard us talk about BetterHelp for the past month or so now, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. And these reviews are updated every day, with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. Please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. They also hold all required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. Just answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back. All right, let's get into some of these position battles. Like I said at the top of the show, the Titans released their initial depth chart, the first depth chart we've seen since the spring stuff when none of it was real and it didn't matter at all. I will also say that I still don't think this is real and I still don't think it matters very much, but there are a few little points that I want to pick at that are a little bit more telling to me than others, starting with the offensive side of the ball here. I'm looking at the guard spots. Okay, left guard starter Peter Skoronski, no surprise there. Right guard Cordell Volson is listed as the starter. But Robert Saleh spoke about the right guard spot after yesterday's practice as well. Spoke about the offensive line as a whole and said something interesting, again, more interesting things, but this one very interesting about where they're at with the right guard battle. Take a listen.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. We're trying to find the right combination for that O-line. Feel good about the first unit. That right guard's got to get solidified. But overall, just a lot of guys are going to get opportunities at that thing. Yeah, you got to earn it to be able to get in there. He's been doing a nice job. Like I said, with that right guard spot, we're going to keep working to try to find the best player for it.
He feels good about the first unit, but the right guard's got to get solidified. So if we look at the depth chart again, we're not going to read too much into Cordell Volson being listed as the starter right now. Jackson Slater, we know, has been the main competitor for that spot. But recently in practices, Fernando Carmona has been getting run with the first team. And we've sat here and said, it's probably just, give the rookie a shot with the first team, just kind of see what he has. Robert Saleh mentioned that would happen early on in training camp. He mentioned to the press, you're going to see guys that you know aren't starters running with the first team. That's just to give everybody an opportunity and to see what we have and to get guys ready in case they have to play in the event of an injury. I think what's happening with Fernando Carmona is more than that. I think this is a legitimate, he's in the mix to start, potentially even to start week one. And that would be the best case scenario for the Titans from a youth movement standpoint, from a 4 years of cost-controlled right guard play at a mid-round pick standpoint. Like, there are multiple reasons to believe that Fernando Carmona winning this job is the best thing for the Titans. We know that Cordell Volson, when he has played in the NFL, started 3 years worth of games, wasn't a high-level player. Jackson Slater is a fifth-round guy coming from a small school, now in his second year, but Fernando Carmona has a higher draft pick invested in him, a fourth-round pick versus a fifth-round pick. Does that matter? I'm not sure if that matters, but we can definitely read into it a little bit now that Carmona is getting run with the first team. I would predict still that Cordell Volson ends up starting week one against the Jets. But at this point, I wouldn't be shocked if it was Carmona. And this is something I'm going to be tracking very closely, both in the preseason week one game. Is Carmona, does he get on the field with the first team offense, which is not, the first team offense is not going to play probably maximum gets three series in this game. And if they're successful on any of the first series that they play, maybe they only get two. So will he have a chance to get on the field in this first preseason game with the starters playing such limited reps? If he does, I think that's extremely telling. But even if he doesn't, I'm going to be watching his play on Thursday night and see, like, if he's dominating against 49ers backups when he does get out there with the second unit or whatever, that would be very interesting to see how well he performs and if he really has a chance to win this job. I do think it's notable that he's listed as the primary right guard backup, while Jackson Slater is listed as the left guard backup. I don't know, like, maybe they're both just backing up the guard spot if a guard goes down who would be the first one off the bench, you know, left or right side. Does it matter? I don't know if it matters. I still kind of think that just due to seniority, Jackson Slater would get the first crack, whether it's right guard or left guard. But maybe Carmona proves himself and gets involved in this mix. This is one of the most interesting camp battles to me because you have a surprise contender that we were not expecting to see in the mix. A few other notes on here. Gunnar Helm listed as tight end one. Daniel Bellinger, his backup. It's not listed as, you know, two tight end set or Bellinger as the tight end one, or an or between Gunnar Helm and Daniel Bellinger's names, or a slash. It is listed as Gunnar Helm tight end one. So that's good for his growth and development into his second year. If you look at the wide receivers, no surprises. Calvin Ridley, Wandale Robinson, Carnell Tate listed as the starters, with Elik Iemanaar, Shimmer Adike, and Bryce Oliver listed as the backups. Xavier Restrepo is listed as Iemanaar's or Calvin Ridley's third string backup out there on an outside receiver spot. Whereas at the slot position, you have Shimmer Adike as the primary backup, KJ Osborne behind him, Mason Kinsey behind him, and Hank Beattie behind him. Remember, this thing goes all the way left to right, and then you go down to the next line and continue going left to right. So KJ Osborne is the third player listed right now for the slot spot. Xavier Restrepo, third player listed for an outside receiver spot. And at the last wide receiver spot, Bryce Oliver is listed as Carnell Tate's backup, with Courtney Jackson behind him and Tyron Montgomery bringing up the rear of that group. Tyron Montgomery hasn't made much noise since training camp started. Hardly any reports have mentioned his name, if they have at all. So not sure that that UDFA darling gem is going to be the guy that Titans fans were hoping he'd be. And then the last thing I wanted to point out on offense is in the running back room, where a lot of Titans fans are getting excited about Nick Singleton and potentially the run he's getting with the first team here and there. Look, this could be a he's a rookie thing. I don't know how much to read into this, but right now you have Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears, obviously the one and two running back, Julius Chestnut right now listed as RB3, Michael Carter actually listed ahead of Kalel Mullings as RB4. Am I reading too much into something that is ultimately meaningless with that one? Maybe, but that's interesting if nothing else. Kalel Mullings, RB5. Nick Singleton is the last guy in the room right now. So maybe if the Titans are out of the playoff hunt by mid-November, they get a look at Nick Singleton, knowing that Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears are both not under contract for next season. But man, that, I mean, you'd expect him to at least be able to be above Michael Carter and Kalel Mullings if he was going to get real run this year. And maybe this will change. Maybe this is, again, just he's a rookie, throw him at the end of the depth chart thing. But it's interesting. It's eye-opening that Nick Singleton is the last guy listed in the running back room. On defense, I think the number one position battle here is, I think there's maybe an outside position battle for the defensive end spot. Jacob Martin and Jermaine Johnson listed as the starters. Femi Oladejo and Keldrick Falk listed as the primary backups. That's not surprising to me. That's exactly the order that I would have expected it to be in. Jacob Martin, when he had to leave yesterday's joint practice with some knee soreness that they're having looked at, doesn't sound serious, so I'm not worried about it right now. But Keldrick Falk was the first guy off the bench to take his spot, not Femi Oladejo. Despite Femi Oladejo being in his second year in the NFL and Keldrick Falk being a rookie, Keldrick Falk was the first guy off the bench. So good sign of development for the first round pick there. I don't know what it means for Femi, but again, this is another one. I'm not reading too much into it. And then the linebacker room, that's where the big battle is. This one really caught my eye. It's very interesting. I don't think anyone expected this. First of all, the Titans do list three starting inside linebackers. Not inside linebackers. I had a comment on a recent episode where I've been calling all off-ball linebackers inside linebackers when technically there's one inside linebacker and then two guys outside of him in a 4-3 scheme. I'm just going to keep referring to them as inside linebackers because it distinguishes them from being edge rushers, which is more 3-4 lingo than 4-3 lingo. I can call them off-ball linebackers, but the point is they have three listed off-ball linebackers in the starting lineup, which that corresponds to a 4-3 scheme. But the three names are Cody Barton, Cedric Gray, no surprise there, and Mahamou Diabate is listed as a starting linebacker on the initial depth chart. Now, I don't think that's been reflected with the way that they've been rolling players out in practices, but that's how it's listed here. James Williams listed as the primary backup to Cody Barton, not Anthony Hill Jr. We think there's a competition between Barton and Hill. They're not listed on the same linebacker spot. Cedric Gray's backup is Dorian Mousey, and Mahamou Diabate's backup is Anthony Hill Jr. Now that makes more sense if you think about who the three, if you're starting and playing three off-ball linebackers, it's probably Cody Barton, Cedric Gray, and you hope Anthony Hill Jr. shows enough to get confidence from the coaching staff to play in those sets in week one. So that's why I think Mohamed Diabate is listed as the starter. I think this is a make the rookie earn it kind of thing. So they put the rookie, Anthony Hill Jr., as Diabate's backup, so that eventually when they're ready to give Anthony Hill the starting job, they don't have to bench Cody Barton or Cedric Gray. They can bench a guy who's more of a special teams backer in Mohamed Diabate. I think that's why it's listed this way. James Williams would probably be linebacker 4, and he's been making a lot of noise in camp, making play, like it seems like on a daily basis, he's been making plays out there. So I think the Titans have 4 linebackers they're going to feel good about. I think Mohamed Diabate, by being first on the depth chart right now, is sort of stands as the 5th linebacker in the room. And if they keep 5, he's probably the last one that they keep. And then that would mean bye-bye to Dorian Mousey and the other guys in the room who are mostly no-name nobodies. Dominique Hampton, Sean Brown, Manny Powell, a couple of UDFAs there in Brown and Powell. So still an interesting set there. And then no surprises at corner or nickelback or safety. Alante Taylor, Cordell Flott listed at starting outside corners. Marcus Harris starting nickel. Amani Hooker, Kevin Winston Jr., the starting safeties. Tony Adams, Amani Hooker's backup, indicating maybe he doesn't have as much of a box role and maybe does have more of a deep role. Kendall Brooks listed as Winston Jr.'s backup. And then Joshua Williams listed as an outside backup corner. Micah Robinson, we expect to be cornerback 5, listed as Alante Taylor's backup. And Kedrain Callaghan, maybe currently in the running for backup nickel. Maybe it's a practice squad stash and elevate on game day if Marcus Harris is unavailable for a week or a period of time. But then you have the guys who had interceptions in practice against the Niners. Mario Goodrich and Nazi Johnson are at the back of the cornerback room, along with Jalen McMurray, and then a bunch of backup safeties. Bishop Fitzgerald, if anyone had hopes for undrafted rookie free agent safety, Bishop Fitzgerald making the roster. He's currently the last safety listed on the depth chart. Again, that could be like a make the rookie earn it type of thing, but he's a guy that I'll be watching in preseason just because I'm curious about him. I think a lot of people had a draftable grade on him and he went undrafted, so he'd probably get a good amount of run in the preseason game. But those are the big position battles right now. Right guard and inside linebacker, where I do not expect Mohamed Diabate to be a starting inside linebacker or off-ball, a starting off-ball linebacker in week one against the Jets. I would expect either James Williams, because of seniority and having been in the league for a couple seasons now, or the rookie that they invested, traded up to pick in the second round, Anthony Hill Jr. One of those two guys is going to take Diabate's starting job before week one, I think. We'll see who it is. Obviously, my money's on Anthony Hill Jr., even if I don't think, like, when they go to a sub-package look and there's only 2 off-ball linebackers on the field, I do think Hill is probably the one who comes off the field since he is a rookie. But who knows? Maybe it's Cody Barton. Although Cody Barton was making plays in yesterday's practice. 2 pass breakups for Cody Barton, who needs to be better in pass defense. That's a good sign for him and his ability to lock down that role. At right guard, I've given my thoughts many times. I think Cordell Volson is going to start week one. I don't know how long he'll hold on to that job for, and I don't know if Fernando Carmona's really in the mix, but Robert Saleh's saying that they still need to lock up, they still need to solidify right guard. I'm starting to wonder, like, what's the timetable? By when do you want to have your first team full unit offensive line settled so that they can get as many reps together as possible so that they can gel and play off of one another? I do think there's value in continuing to rotate these guys because during the course of a season, it's very unlikely that all 5 of your starting offensive linemen are going to play all 17 games and every snap of all 17 games together. And so you need to be able to gel with not just the actual starting 5 unit, but if a backup has to come in off the bench, you got to be able to gel with him too. So there is value in getting all these reps with different guys and different combinations because you'll play a bunch of different combinations during the season, most likely due to injury. That said, you want your starting 5 to have chemistry and trust in one another and to really gel and play as a unit, just like in the secondary. So the sooner they can get this worked out, I think the better chance the Titans offensive line stands in week one of blocking guys like David Bailey, who's apparently dominating in Jets camp, dominating in joint practices with the Buccaneers that they're holding this week. So you want that O-line solidified sooner rather than later, but I don't know. I'm going to be keeping my eye on Fernando Carmona on Thursday night and see if he can really get into the mix for this job. The fact that they haven't solidified it yet and that Carmona has been getting a lot of run signals that maybe they're not happy with Volson and Slater and they want to see what they have in the rookie. Kevin Zeitler is still on the street. If they feel really terrible about this room in a week or two, Maybe they can go sign Kevin Zeitler. I still think they need to sign a swing tackle. They haven't done it yet. Right now, they'd be leaning on Austin Deculus to be the guy if J.C. Latham or Dan Moore has to come out of the game for any reason. So those are the position battles I'm watching most closely heading into the preseason game. Tomorrow, going to have a group of special guests on the show to preview more in depth what to watch for in the preseason week one game against the 49ers, where the Titans starters are expected to play a handful of series, at least one series per Robert Saleh. So that'll be exciting. Can't wait to watch the Titans get out there and play football, even if it is three quarters worth of backups playing or more. I'm still excited to see these guys take the field for the first time in the new uniforms. It's going to be really fun to watch. So that'll do it for this episode. Come back tomorrow. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, and drop a comment below. Who do you think's winning the right guard job? Who do you think's starting at off-ball linebacker? And any other position battles that you find interesting, let us know in the comments below. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.